This is Counter Stories, a podcast by people of color, for people of color, and everyone else. I'm Don Eubanks, associate of Dendros and member of the Mille Lacs Band of Ojibwe Indians.
I'm Luz Maria Frias, Deputy Attorney General with the state of Minnesota. Any comments and opinions that I share are strictly my own and should not be attributed to my employer.
I'm Halili, owner of The Other Media Group and producer of Counter Stories.
And our fourth member, Anthony Galloway, is out of town and can't join us today. But we have a very special guest. As everyone is aware, in the past couple weeks, we've lost a couple of honored, respected elders from our various communities of color in American Indian community. We lost Bill Kampman, Mel Reeves, and Clyde Bellecourt. And in honor of that, we invited our special guest with us. And at this point in time, I'd like Lisa Ballinger to introduce herself and to our audience. And Lisa.
Ha, bonjour, everybody. Bijouin, Sminawa, Wagmuha, Wakawi, Indigo, Wabajeshi, and Dodame, Kasaga Squad, Jimmy Cog, and Donjuma, Minawa, Gakabi Kong, and Dainda Nungum. Bonjour, everybody. My Anishinaabe name is Young Lynx Woman and Sacred Gourd Woman, and I am Anishinaabe Ojibwe and Dakota from the Leech Lake Nation. I am Martin Clan, and I am so happy to be here with you today, although sad for the circumstances.
Miigwech, Lisa. So, you know, Lisa, you are also the current executive director of the American Indian Movement. And in that position, you've had the honor to work very closely with someone that we lost in our community, in the American Indian community. And so I was hoping that you would be able to share. As the executive director of the American Indian Movement, could you please explain what the American Indian Movement currently is? There may be listeners in our audience that are not familiar with the history of AIM.
Bonjour, yes. The American Indian Movement was formed in 1968. However, the concept was founded or established a few years before that within the walls of the Stillwater State Penitentiary here, when my Uncle Clyde met Uncles Eddie Benton Bonet within the correctional system, and their meeting and their talking and sharing of stories. And, you know, Uncle Clyde being incarcerated for the majority of his young life, was curious to how Eddie still had some sense of happy spirit as he was walking through the walls of the correctional system, the building. You know, and it all boils down to, I believe the answer something about, you can't, you know, lock up my spirit. Clyde took that conversation and took that friendship, and as they were released and back into community, they decided to continue with that foundation of spirit and energy to work towards, you know, healing and working and freeing our people and our communities. Some of the first actions of the American Indian Movement back in the late 1960s and 1968, it was an issue of police brutality. And it's kind of interesting that 52 years later, you know, we are still dealing with that very same issue. Back then, it was a matter of where the police would pick up our people, and by the time they would get released out of jail or dumped back into the community somewhere, they would be all beat up. And so the AIM community started AIM Patrol and started bearing witness to the police interactions. And so they could provide testimony and witness that person was not beat up when they were taken into custody. So in the case when they were released, if they had to, should be in about the same shape. And the patrol has kind of surfaced throughout the movement off and on over the years, but AIM has you know, really stood for rights of indigenous people, you know, and equity issues and looking for justice, you know, for our people. So looking at treaty rights, looking at women's rights, looking at, you know, equity in housing, health care, education systems. AIM started survival schools that extended across the United States and Canada as well. AIM also had the founding of the International Indian Treaty Council, who today is a NGO within the United Nations and provides testimony and presents to, you know, the United Nations through the Human Rights Council. So, you know, in actions that people might know of the American Indian Movement include, you know, of course, we think of the Wounded Knee Uprising in 1973, you know, again, standing for rights of indigenous people, standing for treaty rights and protecting land, but also the caravan we traveled. I didn't get to caravan. I was too little, but my mom participated. She was there since the beginning. And so that's how I was raised in AIM. But the caravan to Plymouth Rock to talk about the first, you know, uncovering the true history of Thanksgiving. You know, my mom said she calls it Thanksgiving. And then also the occupation of the BIA building in Washington, D.C., again, calling for equity and justice within that system for our people that was built, designed to represent and protect our people. Longest walk in 1978 to oppose the 11 pieces of legislation that were designed to abrogate our treaty rights. So that's just a few things of the American Indian Movement.
You're listening to Counter Stories. I'm Don Eubanks with co-hosts Luz Marie Freyas and Hilly Lee, and our special guest, Lisa Ballinger. This show is created and supported by Ampers with support from the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund. For our full conversation, please visit counterstories.com. To hear our listener reflections on Clyde's legacy, you find this full recording on our website, counterstories.com. So, you know, Lisa, I remember back when AIM first started, I was in junior high school and hanging out on the Ave. And, you know, I remember stories of having reports that the police not only were our people being abused after being picked up, but I remember there being reports that sometimes they would pick them up and wouldn't even put them in the car, would transport them in the trunk of the police car. So, you know, there were abuses happening quite a bit to American Indians and how they were being treated by Minneapolis police and back in that day. And I remember the AIM patrols and in 1969, I was, you know, part of the youth of AIM, and actually was able to attend a couple of events where they took us to, I think the first one I went to was in Wisconsin. We traveled to Madison, Wisconsin. Please don't ask me what it was for. My memory no longer functions that well. But then I made another trip with AIM and with Clyde and Dennis and many of the all the other adults that were with AIM at that time. And we went to Devil's Lake, North Dakota. Now, what I do remember about that particular trip, when we left Devil's Lake, North Dakota, as soon as we crossed the Minnesota border, we were pulled over by the FBI. And the FBI? That's correct. The Federal Bureau of Investigation, who has always been, I think, a thorn in the side of AIM and other kind of groups, you know, groups that arose during that time. But yeah, we were pulled, the FBI pulled over our bus and held us up for about an hour, and then we were able to get back on the bus and come home. So
what was the holdup? Like, why did they pull you guys over or stop you?
You know, I was 15 years old. I wasn't in the know. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I wasn't organizing anything. I was along. And all I know is that the FBI pulled us over. I never did find out why. I didn't ask. And but I'm just sharing, you know, I'm just sharing my recollections of my involvement with AIM when I was young, because AIM was significant for me at that time, because it was the first organization that began to instill a sense of pride in who we were as Native Americans. You know, to me, that's what AIM, while they were doing all those other things, they were instilling a sense of pride in us, because it was the first time we were hearing Indian folks speaking positively about Indian folks.
There's two things there. One is that how AIM really promoted and encouraged youth to attend. And, you know, like, that was one of the things Clyde did, was he always made sure that he brought youth along with him at different events and activities. And I remember going to, you know, the Milwaukee Peltier trial, and that was where I first met Leonard Crowdog. And I remember going to Greengrass, to the where the Sacred Buffalo Calf Pipe is. You know, that's where some of the AIM people used to Sundance at. But, you know, Clyde always made sure that, you know, there was youth representation. And the other thing, you know, here in Minneapolis, were you part of TANS, Donald?
My God, Lisa, you're one of the few folks who actually knew TANS. Yeah, you know, I was at Minneapolis North in 1969, 1970, and Minneapolis Education hired one of the first Indian liaisons, and they hired Barry Blackhawk. And so he was our Native American advisor at North. And that was the year that we started the group True American Native Students, TANS. He allowed us to come up with that name ourselves. And so, yes, I was a part of TANS in my sophomore year at Minneapolis North.
So in that, what I see happened and what happened throughout AIM was that not only was there AIM, but AIM sparked a lot of, like you said, it raised a lot of pride amongst our people across the nation. And there was a an elder, Philip Deere, who is one of our spiritual leaders. And I believe it was Philip that talked about the vision that he had had about how coming, or there was a prophecy that there would be coming of this group with these red hats that would come and they would lift our people up. And then if you think about how AIM always, the AIM wore those red berets all the time, you know, and how it was AIM that really sparked that, you know, the concept of Native pride again, you know, and long hair, growing our hair long. I remember when Red Schoolhouse used to post flyers or put up little signs about Ojibwe ceremonies, and people would, you know, comment on that, or, you know, have something to say, be like, oh, you're not supposed to post anything like that. And then Clyde would follow and do the Sundance posters. And, you know, the response to that was the elders said, you know, that we're supposed to share this information with our people. This belongs to our people. This is their inherent right to know these ceremonies. This is their inherent right to know these songs and the language and the traditions. So we don't have to hide anymore.
You know, when both of you speak about Indian pride and instilling an empowerment in Indigenous folks, I can't help but to think about when I visited the Civil Rights Museum in Memphis, Tennessee, about 5 years ago, and saw that Dr. King worked and collaborated with AIM, based on what the exhibits were, you know, were showing there, and just thinking about how AIM has had this incredible national movement, if you are in the know, so to speak, right? Because not a lot of folks are familiar with AIM. So I'm so glad, Lisa, that you are here, really, as the executive director, giving us not only the historical framework of it, but also just what you're engaged in now and the importance that it's had through the decades, not only within the Indigenous community, but more broadly in the civil rights movement as well. Can you speak to some of that in terms of civil rights movement and the work that was done with Dr. King?
Right. We have always had, we have built alliances with not only civil rights leaders, but, you know, like we're talking, you know, Brown Berets.
For our listeners who may not be familiar with who the Brown Berets are, can you give us some context there?
So Brown Berets are the Latino,
yep,
Mexica counterpart of AIM, representing their own struggles, which of course parallel ours. And I remember, and you know, like what was interesting, what I think tied a lot of us together, or, you know, one of those common threads, you know, it wasn't holding hands and singing songs together. It was, we shared stories on the tactics of the COINTELPRO. And in fact, one of the things I did as a young AIMster is I flew out to Washington, D.C. to attend the hearings. It was the Citizens Review Commission on the FBI. We heard testimony from, you know, the Black Panthers, from the All People's Revolutionary Party, from New Republic of Africa. You know, they shared all the tales of the counterintelligence stuff, the wiretapping, the raids on homes, the, you know, getting followed, the infiltration and undercovers that were planted throughout all the movements. And it was really interesting to see that we all kind of shared those same stories. I remember my house in St. Paul was like the go-to place during the Wounded Knee trials. And I think that was 75 or 76. We had to keep our curtains closed because, you know, those big spotlights, their cars had those spotlights right on them. And they would drive by the side of our house and shine those lights in our windows. I would have a big sedan follow me to and from school every day. I remember one day waking up and I was sick, so I stayed home from school. And, you know, I knew that during the day, during lunch break, the people from the trial would come to our house and they'd regroup, strategize, eat, rest, do laundry, whatever they need to do if there was a recess, and then go back to the trials. Well, and so I opened my door and I had stayed home because I was sick, and I was like yelling, "Mom, are you here? You know, hello." Well, all of a sudden I hear the door slam and I hear a car squealing out. And I was like, well, that's odd. And so I went downstairs and looked, and our house had been ransacked. I mean, like, oh my God, you know, what you see on TV is nothing to what they do in real life. So, you know, so today I have a thing about curtains, keeping my windows covered. Yeah. And I never put it together until I shared this story with some high school students, you know, like 15 years ago.
We asked you, our listeners, to send in some reflections on Clyde's legacy. Follow us on Facebook to see how and when we ask for your calls.
Hamatakiyape, Senator Mary Kunish Imakiyapi. I'm Minnesota Senator Mary Kunish, living in New Brighton, Minnesota. Ma Lakota, a descendant of a long line of the Standing Rock people. In these past few years, I've been honored to know Clyde Bellacourt and support and collaborate with him in battling the use of Indian nicknames by sports teams as mascots. It's just one of those issues in Clyde's long campaign for Native rights, and I'll continue to honor the work that he began right here in Minnesota. I grew up knowing about Clyde Bellecourt from my parents and the public attention that he brought as a civil rights leader and his work in the American Indian Movement. His fight for tribal sovereignty inspires me every day at our state capitol as we continue to fight for public safety and culturally centered education, better housing and opportunities for American Indians in Minnesota and abroad. His legacy was most evident during the recent unrest in South Minneapolis when our AIM members joined together to patrol and protect people and buildings from harm. Clyde Bellecourt's legacy will continue in the community he advocated for here in Minnesota and probably worldwide. In the work that he's done, the stories he's told, and the good change Clyde left to us as he moves on, I can only believe that he wishes the best for those who remain behind. So it's up to us, all of us left here on Uchimaka, Mother Earth, to live our lives in the fullest and best way, making positive change for the next seven generations. And when we do that, we pay the greatest tribute to the life Clyde lived and the legacy he leaves us. Wopala Tonka, Clyde Bellecourt.
You're listening to Counter Stories. I'm Don Eubanks with co-hosts Luz Marie Freyas and Hilly Lee, and our special guest, Lisa Ballinger. This show is created and supported by AMPERS with support from the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund. For our full conversation, please visit counterstories.com. Lisa, I'm going to show my ignorance here, but you've mentioned your mother a couple times. Was your mother Pat?
Pat Ballinger.
Pat Ballinger. So your mother was part of the original founding members of AIM.
Yes, she was. And she was born in St. Paul.
All those early meetings.
Yep, she sure was. You know, she was part of the original United Nations delegation to Geneva. She remained on the Treaty Council Board. And so that is why, you know, that's how I grew up with AIM. My mom was right there. I remember reading an FBI document. They had released some files and somebody posted it or sent me a copy of one of the pages. And they talked about Bellinger. Then they talked about Bellinger's kids and they didn't think that Bellinger's kids were. Yeah, I don't think we have to worry about them. You know, they're not involved at this point.
Wow. It's like, yeah, that's what we want you guys to think. Yeah. You guys go think that.
Lisa, what, if you can share with us in closing, what comes to mind as you think about your uncle Clyde Bellecourt's legacy? And then we understand that you may still be in the car, which explains the background noise. If there is someone else with you who would also like to share his legacy with our listeners.
So for me, the legacy that really drives me is his work and his dedication towards language and culture and ensuring that it's there, that our children have access to it, and that it will continue to flow through to the, you know, the next generations, you know, along with protecting, you know, treaty rights, you know, the love of his grandchildren. You know, leads his work, you know, around language and culture and ensuring that youth are represented and protected. And then I have here with me is Suzanne Smoke.
Bonjour, Nian Adeshnakashkinukwe, Makwado Dem, Alderville Donchaba. My colonized name is Suzanne Smoke. I'm the director of AIM Southern Ontario. I'm here with my daughter, Ogama Gijigokwe, headwoman of the Sky World. And for us, Uncle Clyde really taught us about sovereignty and really understanding that there is no border for us, that we are all here on Turtle Island, and that border crossed us. We are all Indigenous, and we can't be divided by that imaginary border. And that happens in the South, too, when we think about those kids in cages. We are all Indigenous, and we are part of Turtle Island, and we have a foreign settler government that's setting up these colonial boundaries and telling us where we can and can't travel. And, you know, in Canada, we have a pass system. And most recently, you know, we have the horrific discoveries of Indigenous children in large holes in the ground. Mm-hmm. And I never use the word graves because that's the narrative that, they, you know, these were large graves, but that implies that there was a memorial or that there was knowledge of, and that's really not the case. Mm-hmm. And so really for us, it's about sovereignty. It's about assertion of sovereignty. And it's also about land back. And Uncle taught us we never give another inch of land. And, you know, settler nation resides on 98% of the land base, while collectively all of us as Indigenous nations reside on less than 2%. But of that 2%, that's where they want to put the pipelines. That's where they want to poison the water. Mm-hmm. That's where they want to take. And at what point do we say enough is enough? And so now we're at that point, you know, we're standing strong, not another inch, not, you know, no more resource extraction. You know, it's time to like take a seat at the table and say, this is how we as Indigenous nations are going to move forward. No settler foreign nation is going to come to my land and tell me how I'm going to live and how I'm going to raise my children. And so that's what he instilled in us, is that there is no border for us and we will not give another inch of land. And we will raise our children in the culture and the language and the ceremonies and the prayers, because that's who we are as Indigenous people.
Wow. Wow. Powerful, powerful words. Wow.
As I kind of mentioned earlier, that AIM, Clyde Bellecourt, AIM, what they did is they instilled a sense of pride in us as young Native American kids growing up in the Twin Cities in Minneapolis. They let us know that we counted, that we had a voice, that through all everything that was happening in this country, it was the first time that we heard Native voices saying that we are here, we were always here, and we will always be here. And that voice made it possible for us to move forward. That was the legacy that Clyde, that was the legacy that AIM created for us. And it definitely has helped me through my career. I will be forever indebted to Clyde and to AIM for what they did, because it made it, I believe it made it possible for me to do what I've done in my life.
What they did and what they continue to do, because, you know, AIM is still, it still exists. The movement continues. The issues are still there. This is not something that we should just learn, you know, that happened in the 60s. It is still happening.
We are still here. I'm Don Eubanks, associate of Dendros Group and member of the Mille Lacs Band of Ojibwe Indians.
I'm Luz Maria Frias, Deputy Attorney General with the State of Minnesota. Any comments and opinions that I've shared are strictly my own and should not be attributed to my employer.
And I'm Halili, owner of the Other Media Group and producer of Counter Stories.
And our special guest is
Lisa Bellinger and Suzanne Smoke. And we say thank you and gigawabam and miigwech.
Miigwech. This has been Counter Stories, a co-production of the Counter Stories crew, the Other Media Group, and AMPRS, Diverse Radio for Minnesota Communities, with support from the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund. For our full conversation, please visit counterstories.com.